Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:06 p.m. and that is Pacific Summer Time, and today is June 4th. Well, the news today, well, what do we have? We have Slovenia adopting a populist government, so that's just another one in Europe that is taking a populist jump to outside of the status quo. Let's simply define it like that. Then when you look at the outlook for the market generally, Apple is at a new all-time high. So this is not simply a new all-time high, that it actually broke out to new highs about 5 weeks ago. So this represents a clear outperformance by the world's largest share. Now, it's also, I think, worth taking some time to look at some of the other very large tech shares, because Facebook is on the cusp of new all-time highs. And it has been rather steady. It was at a new closing high on Friday, and it was down ever so slightly in here today, but this continues to look like really very firm action. Google has rebounded rather impressively from the $1,000 level, and it is now approaching this progression of lower rally highs, but so far this is about as bullish an environment as one could hope for. This was a somewhat larger pullback than we've seen at any point in the step sequence uptrend since really since 2011, and it really did need to bounce from the $1,000 level, and it has done. So that's rather impressive action. Then when we look at some of the other rather large companies, Microsoft has continued to exhibit relative strength and is also at new highs. And I think these are important charts. Cisco Systems, which is, I think, something that is worth keeping an eye on, because it has continued to hold this progression of higher reaction lows. That's despite the fact that there have been some stabs on the downside. It's a hardware producer. It is the kind of company that benefits from the rollout of new infrastructure in the technology sector. So I think it is an interesting contrast. When we look at, for example, the NASDAQ 100, which consolidated in the region of its 2000 peak for the better part of 2 years back in 2015 and 16, and has subsequently greatly improved upon that performance and has been pausing around the 7000 level for much of the last few months, but is looking increasingly likely that it is going to be able to sustain this move back above the 7,000 area. Now, you will remember that there was a very clear downside key reversal back in March from above 7,000. So that contributed to a retest of the lows posted in February. And we've had two rather impressive days on the upside the last 2 days. So I think people will be looking at that 7,200 level with some, at least a modicum of apprehension in the hope that we're not going to see another clear downward dynamic similar to what we saw in March. If it can clear the 7,200 level, well, I think then we have to conclude that this corrective phase, at least for the technology sector, has ended. But I think it is also worth considering that, for example, when you look at the major constituents of the NASDAQ 100 right now, which are primarily software-oriented companies. Amazon is obviously an online retailer and has a very significant physical presence, but the reality is that the vast majority of its R&D is going into artificial intelligence, and its and it is very much a software-oriented company. And then we look at Microsoft, and that's a software company. So is Facebook, so is Alphabet. And the constituents of the Philadelphia semiconductors sector are primarily hardware companies. And what is increasingly evident is that the kinds of, that a significant number of companies are investing the windfall from the tax credits that they got as a result of the Trump tax cuts in new hardware. And what I find particularly interesting is when you look at the Philadelphia Semiconductors Index, it has a very similar pattern to the NASDAQ 100, but with approximately a 2.5 year lag. So the index has paused in the region of the 2000 peak, and so far it has been relatively steady in this region. With the Nasdaq now breaking higher, there is the possibility that the semiconductors index is also going to advance from these levels. So I think that we do have the possibility that not only software but hardware is also going to do better in this environment. Well, we know therefore that it is the technology sector that is leading the market higher. And that is despite the fact that you have geopolitical tensions, not least with the rising tide of populism in Europe. But Europe today was in reasonably positive territory. The Euro Stoxx index did not quite hold all of its advance, and it has got some work to do in order to really begin to, I think, confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. But it has at least paused in the region of the trend mean. It has been ranging below 400 now since the middle of 2017, and there have been some bouts of heightened volatility. But the bigger question, I think, will be what happens with the euro. The Euro Stoxx itself has been ranging below 400 since about 2015. There are important peaks from 2000 and back in 2007 are below 450. That's obviously for the Euro Stoxx. If we look at the Europe Stoxx, which is currency agnostic, then it is also ranging below 400, but on the longer term chart, that 400 level represents the prior peaks from 2000, 2007, and 2015. So the FTSE 100 has already broken higher. That has, of course, been aided by the weakness of the pound, and the FTSE pushed on to new all-time highs 3 weeks ago and is now consolidating in the region of those peaks. So this, I think, there is a short-term overbought condition, and it is being unwound, and so far in a rather steady manner. So there is potential for additional upside here, and I think, very simply, if we take the labels off the chart and ignore the news, when any index has been going sideways for 17 years and then breaks higher, well, the breakout is, as long as it is sustained, can be considered a first step above the base. And if it's a first step above the base and it's been sustained, then we're in a new secular bull market. So I think that's a rather important consideration. In comment of the day today, I had an email from a subscriber in Japan, and reiterating the point that I was making in the Friday audio that, in my experience at least, having visited Japan twice in the last 12 months, that we've seen a lot of foreigners working, and that completely belies the perception overseas that there are no foreigners in Japan, that it is one of the few monocultural societies left. But when you have an environment where there is a labor shortage, where there are increasingly large numbers of people retiring, and you have a strong economy, then the natural solution is that those jobs are going to be filled by somebody, and if you don't have the people domestically, then people are going to come from overseas to take those jobs. And that was always considered impossible in Japan, but I think the practicalities of the situation are starting to come home to roost, and the Japanese are accepting immigrants. There is the real possibility that they're going to ease immigration, I think, rules over the course of the next few months. But we have to look at the Japanese market over a very lengthy period of time, because it has been going sideways for the better part of 30 years. And where we th when we look back at the early 1990s, then it hasn't been able to sustain a move above 20,000 for an awfully long time. But that does appear to be what it is doing now. And Again, if that is the case, then this is a new secular bull market. Now, I did mention we should look at the euro. So, the euro was in somewhat po more positive territory in here today. It is really quite oversold in the short term. I think even in a bear market environment, there is the potential for it to unwind its oversold condition relative to the trend mean. But it has a lot of work to do if it is going to resume its medium-term advance. It needs to at least sustain a move back above 120. And at this stage, that's looking like a big ask. But nonetheless, I think there is the short-term potential for a rally at the present moment, at least. And the pound was also is also somewhat oversold in the short term, but again, it does have some work to do. We have had a substantial dollar advance here, not least because of the relative performance of Wall Street versus just about everything else. And I think that there has been also within a corrective phase, people tend to have a risk off way of dealing with things, and that means that you get a bid for the yen, you get a bid for the dollar, and you get a bid for treasuries. Well, we had some very meaningful moves in US treasuries on Friday, and now we're starting to see these, excuse me, last week, and now we're starting to see the lower side of the range offering resistance here for the US bond market, and the yield is back up to 2.93%. This is a meaningful rebound. I think it is worth looking at the Treasury futures for some perspective of just how oversold the market had been, but that's a very large tail on the candle from last week. So it unwound the oversold condition in rather rapid fashion, and what this is now starting to confirm is that traders are looking on the bond market as a sell the rallies environment rather than a buy the dips market. And that is a very profound change. Now, when we look at the total return on treasuries, well, that's when we can see that the price got all the way up to the trend mean and then pulled back sharply from it last week. So this is and it continues to look like an evolving type 3 top formation, which is very close to being completed. And that would confirm the end of the secular bull market in bond markets. Considering that this has been one of the longest running bull markets in history, then the fact that Japan is now, I think, increasingly looking like it's in a secular bull market. Well, that reminds me of the long correlation that was in evidence in the early part of my career, at least, then sort of disappeared for a few years and now appears to be back on track. That you have this correlation between the performance of the Nikkei and the 10-year government bond yield. And part of the reason for it was because Japanese investors would send their money overseas and pick up the yield on treasuries in deference to investing in their domestic stock market. Whereas with yields now rising, then the impetus is rather to invest domestically rather than invest abroad. And that is helping to drive the yields on treasuries higher, but also to drive the domestic stock market in Japan. It is the proverbial Mrs. Watanabe trade, and we are seeing that correlation starting to come back into evidence. So I think that's a meaningful change that we're getting in the markets. But the rising yield environment is, I think, most particularly going to represent an issue for consumer staples type companies because they have tended to represent the kinds of instruments that yield-hungry investors tend to buy. And when we look back at history, there was a significant period of time from the early 1990s that yield investors were willing to take about 2.5%. Then we had a step change in 2008, and now they're looking at 3.5%. But that is for the broader index. If, for example, we look at McDonald's on that same yield basis, that McDonald's tends to get up to a yield of about 3.5%, and then it rallies. So the yield is now about 2.5%, and the question now will be, this is no longer as attractive from a yield perspective, and the share is now right in the region of the trend mean. The question I think many people will be asking is, if yield-hungry investors are not willing to support it at these levels, when it is a dividend aristocrat and has been raising dividends for as long as anyone can remember, then the question is, will they wait until it gets back to a yield of 3.5%? Well, if they do, then it's going to fail at this level. And this is the challenge for these kinds of companies. They need to be raising their dividends in an aggressive manner if they're going to remain competitive with the yield available in treasuries. And that Rubicon of 3.5% may not hold. When we look at, for example, something like Campbell's Soup, I posted it in Comment of the Day when I was discussing this issue last week, that the yield was encountering resistance around 3.5% continually from approximately 1994, but the yield is currently around 4.2%. So that represents a rather distinct change in the trading environment. Well, the share has accelerated lower, and the pop in the yield, with the fact that it has not been above this yield previously, would suggest, at least to me, that investors are concluding they're going to cut the dividend. And again, that is a testament to the difficulties that the market has in this environment, that people were buying these kinds of companies because they had bond-like characteristics. But they no longer have these bond-like characteristics if they've got mature markets. They need to be able to increase their margins, but they won't be able to increase their prices until you have inflationary pressures picking up, which would give them an excuse to do so. Well, the way that they have been able to preserve margins over the course of the last 30 years is to reduce portion sizes. And the question now is whether that is still a sustainable business model when you can only reduce the portion size too much before consumers rebel. So I think the big question then for these types of companies is, are they going to be able to get some pricing power back if we do move into a more inflationary environment? Whereas if you look at the kinds of companies that I was going through in the technology sector at the beginning of this broadcast, well, a number of those have adopted a subscription-based business model, and that offers them the potential to raise prices with little pushback from their customer bases. And that's an important differentiator, because the technology sector is both high growth and positive cash flow. So they are increasingly raising their dividends in a really rather impressive manner. They have the stability of the subscription-based business model, and they generally are now posting somewhat higher yields than you get from some of the consumer staples. So there is a realistic possibility that it is the subscription business model represents the new paradigm from the for a growth and income oriented investor. This is something that we saw with the autonomies and the consumer staples sector back in 2010, and now we've had a further concentration within that sector into the subscription business model. And I think it is only a matter of time before we get an ETF that is exclusively looking at the subscription-oriented business models. Now, when we look at what's been going on in Asia, I think it is time to pay particular attention to what is going on in China. The A-share index has bounced from the 3,200 area, but it needs to break the downward bias. it needs to sustain a move back above the trend mean. There are a lot of moving parts inside China right now, and the big news story that is out there on the horizon is the issuance of CDRs. I think that potentially that is the number one consideration from the perspective of mainland investors, because they'll be freeing up cash because they want to buy companies like Alibaba and like JD.com. Well, Alibaba has broken out to new recovery highs, and excuse me, this is new all-time highs. JD.com has not quite managed that feat yet. It is bouncing though from the lower side of its range, and Baidu, which is also one of the shares that will be issuing CDRs, has firmed within its range. It had that very clear triangular pattern all the way through from 2016 through to July of last year, and now it has had this volatile range, which has generally found support in the region of the trend mean. There is the potential that the issuance of CDRs could be the catalyst that which could see it trade up and out of this range. So the firmness that we're getting in a number of the foreign listed Chinese shares with and the relative weakness of the mainland shares suggests that there is a certain amount of pairs trading going on right now. And rather than thinking about the I think, or perhaps not so much thinking, but focusing on the fact that you have further tightening in the shadow banking system, and that the imposition of the property taxes is a headwind for the Chinese market at some point next year. The perhaps the more important point in the short term is that the introduction of CDRs has the real potential to be a very bullish catalyst for China's tech sector. And when we look at what's going on in India, the rupee has been firming. So that is going to represent something of a little bit of a headwind for the market in the short term. This was a downward dynamic for the Nifty in here today. And when we look at what's going on in the currency, it has been firming from that 68 area, but not so much in here today. I think we, considering that the market had come down to test the 10,000 level on the Nifty, that we are probably in for some additional consolidation. But as long as the as long as it's holding the region of 10,000, and as long as the rupee is holding its lows, then I don't think that this is anything other than a consolidation. And when we look at the market from a currency adjusted perspective, for example, the JP Morgan India Trust is right in the region of the trend mean, and it needs to demonstrate that it can sustain a move back above that level to confirm that we're back in a demand dominated environment. But at least it has now posted a higher reaction low, so that is at least contributing to the potential that it can in fact do that. Now, when we look at, for example, an ETF that is looking at Brazil, then I think we can see that the currency has weighed on the market. But it is short-term oversold. Now, the ETF has broken its progression of higher reaction lows, but it is oversold in the short term. So we do have potential for some additional upside in here to at least unwind the oversold condition. And I think that also fits into the potential that the dollar has rallied enough in the short term while still looking like a medium-term bullish prospect. The Asia dollar index is now right in the region of the trend mean, and we're starting to see some evidence coming through of it firming. The Latin America dollar index has not yet rallied, and it is still right in the region of the lows that we've seen back in 2016. So we have to at least conclude that if we were looking for areas where there are problems with currencies, then it's in Latin America rather than Asia particularly. When we look at the industrial metal complex, I've seen a significant number of bearish reports about copper, but the copper price is not going down. It continues to hold this $3 area, and this consolidation looks rather similar to that which we saw at the beginning of 2017 and through most of 2016. So as long as it's holding that $3 area, I think we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. Nickel prices, on the other hand, continue to push on and continue to hold this progression of higher reaction lows. So the base was completed late last year, and it is now testing the $15 area on that ETFS nickel. If we look at the 3-month futures on the LME, then they broke through the psychological 15,000 level last week, and that is a rather positive development. If we look at the rather long-term chart, then nickel peaked at 50,000 back in 2007. So even with the rally that we've had, 50% in the last 12 months, this is still rather depressed relative to where the prices were trading during the commodity bull market. And what I find interesting is that one of the oldest adages in the commodity markets is that the cure for high prices is high prices. And that's particularly the case with cobalt, where prices have gone up approximately 400%. And now we're starting to see that supply is coming into the market, that the Chinese have invested really quite considerably in copper production in the Democratic Republic of Congo, and cobalt is a byproduct of that copper production. And supply of cobalt is now rising. We've seen the price pull back now for 2 weeks. It's not the most liquid contract in the world. So, but perhaps the most important point is that it has not pulled back by more than this amount at any point since early 2016. So there is more supply coming to the market, and the 8-to-1-to-1 nickel to manganese to cobalt ratios are now coming to market and are already in the Tesla Model 3. So on the one hand, you have more supply, and on the other, you have less, potentially less demand. They will not, it's unlikely, very unlikely, that they're going to be able to completely remove cobalt from lithium batteries, but they can engineer it so that they need less of it per battery. Well, that means that the argument for continued upside in the cobalt price is tied to massive growth in the number of batteries out there. Well, that is a realistic possibility, but it's coming up against the potential for additional supply. And we have to think about it from a historical perspective and what happens with commodities, that commodity bull markets seldom end because of a lack of demand, but rather of excess supply. And supply is increasing in the Democratic Republic of Congo. This is an increasingly risky market. Whereas the 8-to-1-to-1 ratios mean that a lot more nickel sulfide is going to be required. So I wonder at this stage, is nickel where cobalt was back in 2016? Because there simply isn't enough of nickel sulfide. It is not the grade that is required for settlement of nickel contracts on the LME. That's why the LME is talking about splitting the contract. And that means that there's going to have to be a lot more investment in nickel supply that is of higher quality. And that's, I think, a rather important characteristic of this market. I think it's also worth just keeping an eye on what's happening with gold. It was pretty much unchanged in here today, and it is continuing to pause below the $1,300 area. This is right in the region of the trend mean, and it, in an ideal scenario, it would continue to hold this level. But so far, there has been a distinct lack of upward dynamics with some follow-through to confirm a return to demand dominance. Platinum is about the most unloved of the precious metals because of the Dieselgate scandal and the fact that people are just not buying those kinds of cars anymore. The price, however, posted a very clear upside key reversal about 2 weeks ago, and so far has held the advance. Now, there's a rivetingly consistent progression of lower rally highs, so it's going to have to do more than that to confirm support around this $880 level, but so far it's holding the $900 area. If it can push up and out of this range, well, then we'd have a much more convincing argument that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. But so far, that hasn't yet happened. Then we have what's going on in the oil market. The spread between Brent and WTI is not at historically high levels, but it is wide. And the price was down today by $1.46. I think that the most likely scenario is that this pullback that began 2 weeks ago is at least similar to the pullback that we saw in February. And that the most likely scenario is that we're now in a process of mean reversion. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.